The Italian Wine Podcast is the community-driven platform for Italian wine geeks around the world. Support the show by donating at italianwinepodcast.com. Donate 5 or more euros and we'll send you a copy of our latest book, My Italian Grape Geek Journal, absolutely free. To get your free copy of My Italian Grape Geek Journal, click support us at italianwinepodcast.com or wherever you get your pods. Grazie mille. Welcome to the Italian Grape Geek Podcast. Join us as we explore personal stories of travel and tasting with Italy's must-know grape varietals. Chart your own course with My Italian Grape Geek Journal, your personal tasting companion to accompany the series. Available now on Amazon. With thanks to Colangelo and partners for their generous support with this project.
Ciao a tutti. Aaron DeMera here, Via Italian Wine Ambassador, certified wine educator, and owner of Wino Inc., a wine industry and education consulting company for Italian wine importers in the U.S. Okay, Italian grape geeks, let's geek out on some Italian grapes. Let's go to the island of Sardinia first, the emerald gem of the Mediterranean. And we find there the red grape Bovale Sardo. When learning about Italian wine, you know a grape has a long history in a region by how many different names it has acquired over the years. Bovale du, Murastellu, and Caranissia are just a few of the dozens. It's often confused with Cagnolari, which is a related but distinct grape, and often called Bovale Grande, which is definitely a separate grape. But, and here comes the science, or the scienza, if you will, Bovale Grande is by DNA analysis the same as the Spanish grape Carignana, and our Bovale Sardo is identical to the Graciano grape grown in Rioja, which now makes sense given that the Kingdom of Sardinia was under Spanish crown from the 13th to the 1700s. But Bovale Sardo definitely reaches its full potential in certain regions of the island. The vines can be vigorous, but better suited to the sandy or clay limestone soils of southern Sardinia, especially around Cagliari. This leads to lower fertility and lower yields, but the lack of humidity is the most important. Bovale Sardo grape bunches are very compact clusters and are susceptible to mold and mildew diseases, but the drought resistance seems to make it perfectly adaptable to a warming climate. Very important. The berries are thick-skinned with blue to an almost black color, and this inky color, along with the high natural tannins and high acidity, are what make it prized as a blending grape, but a challenge in the winery. As many winemakers have said, they struggle to tame the tannins and prevent off aromas from reduction during the vinification. But when it's carefully and well-made, the resulting wines have excellent potential. Usually they're deep ruby to purple in color, with intense aromas and flavors of dark red and purple fruits and flowers, especially that macchia scent of Mediterranean herbs. It's always a dry wine, dominated by the high tannins, acidity, and concentration. And even the typical blending grapes like Cananao, Monica, and Cagnolari don't soften the structure, which I think is also why Bovale Sardo probably has the best aging potential of Sardinia's red wines. A few more facts, the DOPs include, most importantly, Campidano di Terralba, which requires 85% Bovale Sardo, Mandorlasai DOC, where Bovale is the main grape in a blend with Cananao and Monica, and most commonly you'll see Isla dei Nuraghi, the IGT which covers the whole island. There are now fewer than 600 hectares planted to Bovale Sardo, which is down from about 800 15 years ago, so not only is production fairly limited, but the majority are old vines without an official nursery clone. So new plantings have to come from other vineyards and massal selections. Now, my first taste of Bovale Sardo was probably 15 years ago here in the U.S. with the Corum blend, a wine from the famous Argiolas winery. It's 85% Bovale, blended with a little Cananao and Cagnolari, and was definitely in stark opposition to the lighter Cananao wines that had been my experience with Sardinian reds. But I'd say my best exposure to the grape came during the autumn of 2021. It was a whirlwind trip around the island with Professor Scienza and a small group of brave Via ambassadors. And this is why you want to become an Italian wine ambassador, kids. So you too can join one of the yearly Gite Scolastiche, the deep dive wine region educational tours. Now, our tour took us to two of the best producers for Bovale Sardo, Sue N2. It's a newer winery. It's high in the windswept hills of Terralba, and they specialize in monovarietal bottlings of Bovale that have now earned 3 Tre Bicchieri Awards and counting. And the aforementioned Argiolas, where our tour and masterclass were capped with the most traditional food pairing for Bufali Sardo, Porcedu. This is an open fire, slow roasted suckling pig. It's drizzled for hours with fat so that the juicy succulent meat inside is encased by this almost candy-like crunch to the crackling skin. And the guest of honor at dinner, he or she is always presented with the prize delicacy, the crunchy roasted ears, which actually sounds perfect if you wash it down with an inky glass of Bufali Sardo. Now, you can have other meats and sausages and strong cheeses if you don't happen to have a roasted suckling pig handy. You know, this kind of dining experience, it speaks to the contradiction of Sardinia. It's an island in the heart of the Mediterranean that's famous for pork and not fish. It makes twice as much red wine as white wine. And the island has this mountain culture more than one of the sea. But remember, it's one of the blue zones of the world. And this culture leads to the healthiest and longest aged lives. And I imagine it's helped along with glasses of wine like Bufali Sardo. Now, what other producers would you look for? Pala, for sure, P-A-L-A. They make a bottling of a wine called Essencia. It comes from a small 4-hectare plot right near the sea. The vines are old, 60 to 90 years, and it's definitely considered a benchmark for Bufali Sardo. Other producers like Audaria, they're starting to export their wines, and there's a bottling called BVL from Quattro Moro that was one of the excellent finds during our trip around Sardinia, and I've seen it score really well in recent years at 5-star wines. Bufali Sardo seems to be a grape that is earning and is getting more interest and exposure to the rest of Italy and other major export markets, probably because of improved winemaking knowledge, but also a consideration of what grapes will be able to survive a warming and changing climate. I mean, personally, I'm looking forward to finding more Bufali Sardo in the U.S. market. And for now, a presto.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Don't forget to visit our YouTube channel, Mama Jumbo Shrimp, for fascinating videos covering Stevie Kim and her travels across Italy and beyond, meeting winemakers, eating local food, and taking in the scenery. Now back to the show.
Welcome back, Italian Grape Geeks. Aaron here to take you to Piedmont this time, where we'll discover the Brachetto grape. Now, one legend tells of this grape being used during Roman times to make the wine Vinum Aquentia, the wine with which Mark Antony and Julius Caesar wooed the Queen of the Nile, Cleopatra. Now, that romantic notion aside, it is definitely an ancient grape, first mentioned by name in 1877, but still has unknown origins. Because of its likely start in the hills of the Langhe, there are many synonyms: Brachetto del Piemonte, Brachettone, Brachetto Magliardi, even Brachette with a Q across the border in France. Now, most of these are separate grapes or loosely related biotypes, or even confusions among similar grapes. True Brachetto is an aromatic red grape, unusual in the wine world, but not unknown if you study Italian wines. Brachetto bunches are large, long, and loose, which is great. It makes it resistant to diseases of humidity, which in the foggy hills and calcareous clay soils of Monferrato is ideal, especially around the towns of Asti, Alessandria, and Acquiterme. Acquiterme is the town that is considered the crew for Brachetto cultivation, and it lends its name to the DOCG, Brachetto d'Acqui. These growing conditions produce the best aromatic expressions of the grape, and they lead to high levels of the terpenes we talk about, like geraniol, nerol, and citronellol, or as you'd actually describe them in the glass, citrusy and fruity aromas, and very pronounced floral notes, especially rose petals. It's the scent of fresh roses that is now synonymous with Brachetto, along with the flavors of sour cherry, sweet raspberry, wild strawberries especially, and often in good ones, spices like cinnamon and nutmeg. I mean, literally, it's a wine you can smell from an arm's length away. Now, given its long history in Piedmont, Brachetto did not achieve any commercial success of note until the late 1970s. That's when winemaker Arturo Bersano put Brachetto through the Martinotti method, also call it Charmat, if you must, to produce the lower alcohol, sweet spumante or frizzante wines, which are most popular today. The DOCG was created in 96 and is obviously most known for spumante and Maturo Classico, but Rosé, Rosso, and Passito versions are still allowed, although honestly, those are getting increasingly rare and harder to find if you're outside of that region at all. Oddly enough, the wine requires not 100, but 97% Brachetto. You can use 3% other Piemontese varieties. And the DOC, which is Piemonte Brachetto, it encompasses 89 towns in the Dicepinale. Now, that might lead to production of some less than stellar wines, but let's leave Italian wine politics for another podcast. For me, I think like most people, my first taste of Brachetto was this light and fruity, sparkling Brachetto d'Acqui DOCG. It was probably on a date around Valentine's Day, where that fizzy pink wine was supposed to evoke romance and love, or, you know, some version of it. Probably not much of a change since Mark Anthony and Cleopatra, honestly. Now, here in the U.S., the Banfi Company was practically the only producer with distribution. They traded their success with the Riniti Lambrusco wines of the 1970s for something new, but still bubbly and sweet for the American palate. However, my true experience with Brachetto was actually during my very first trip to Italy, a business trip about 20 years ago. I had taken a few extra days to visit Piemonte, and I wound up in the town of Acqui Terme to visit this famous spa hotel. And lunch there was the usual platter, local salamis and cheeses, but they paired it with a drier Frizzante Brachetto. And then the main course, the first time I ever tried Vitello Tonotto, that thin veal with a tuna sauce, that was served with a dry, still Brachetto. It was one of those moments when you think, why isn't everyone eating and drinking this way? And you know, you realize, this could probably only happen right here in this town. More typical, and usually just as enjoyable, though, is the pairing of Brachetto with sweets and desserts, especially chocolate. Brachetto d'Acqui with chocolate-dipped strawberries, that is an easy and sublime combination. I prefer something a little more elegant, like chocolate and red berry panna cotta. Honestly, it's a shame that dessert wines are losing popularity in a lot of markets because the low alcohol nature and really just pleasant drinkability of good Brachetto, you know, should make it more popular with this next generation of wine drinkers. Who do else to look for? I mean, there are many decent producers available in most export markets, but a few of quality to really search out, Belcole, Braida, and Berra. You keep in mind the three Bs. Malvira up in Rero makes a Burbet Spumante that's delicious. Famous Barolo Barbaresco producer Sottomano, they do a bottling called Mate that is a house specialty. And in a lot of export markets, especially in the U.S., Banfi makes a very decent wine they call Rosso Regale. But if you want to go back to the original source, it looks like you can still find the Bersano Brachetto d'Acqui in Italy and in the U.K., and I even read that it's exported to Hong Kong. So happy hunting for Brachetto. A dopo.
Listen to the Italian Wine Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya FM, and more. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the show. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating through italianwinepodcast.com. Any amount helps cover equipment, production, and publication costs. Until next time, cin cin.